happened. I had to run here and celebrate with everyone, man. I have no words. I have no words.
I was teaching a class and I started crying. I heard cheering outside and I could hear it inside. And I was like, I think Biden won. And I grabbed my phone and checked, and it was just really exciting. And I was crying.
My mother is a disabled woman who's on Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare. And to know that Donald Trump is out and he can no longer mess with those programs is amazing.
We have to include everyone. We need a government of inclusion for the people and by the people.
I'm feeling most hopeful about people caring about other people. And that to me is the most important thing in our existence.
Estamos bien felices.
It's historical. And sometimes hysterical.
This is a moment right now of victory, and we're celebrating and taking the streets. But it's not enough. Our work doesn't end here. Now we have to make sure that these promises are delivered to our community.
This day means victory. This day means Black Lives Matter. This day means the next generation. This day means hope. This day means integrity. This day means consistency. This day means that nobody's going to tell us and talk to us and say that it's jokes. No, we're not gonna get fake news anymore. We're not gonna get the wrong answers. That's what that this day means. So this day means music. This day means we can open our mouths and feel happy and walk down these streets and feel comfortable as young African American and mixed children. That's what this day means to us.
A historic election week followed by an emotional weekend as Joe Biden was called the winner of the 2020 election, along with running mate Kamala Harris, the first woman, the first Black woman, the first South Asian woman elected to the executive branch. You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Black women have long been the backbone of the Democratic Party, and this year is no different. Exit polls are showing that more than 90% of Black women cast their ballots for the Democratic ticket. With slim margins in a number of battleground states like Georgia and Pennsylvania, Black voters, especially Black women, helped propel Biden and Harris to victory over President Trump. For more on the power of Black women at the ballot box, I'm joined now by Kimberly Peeler Allen, visiting practitioner at the Rutgers University Center for American Women in Politics, and Martha Jones, a professor from the Johns Hopkins University and author of Vanguard, How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. Kimberly and Martha, thanks for joining us.
So Thank great you. To be here.
Martha, this isn't new. Once again, Black women have led the way for the Democratic Party. How did they become the most consistent Democratic voter bloc in United States history?
Black women have for 100 years, since ratification of the 19th Amendment, been organizing, strategizing, defying the odds, and insisting on a place at the table in American politics. Black women spend until 1965, too many of them disenfranchised until passage of the Voting Rights Act. And so when we see Senator Harris stands in for Black women who today, in a short 55 years, have made themselves a force in American politics.
What motivated Black women to the polls this year in particular?
Well, I think what motivated them this year is very similar to what has motivated them to the polls ever since they got the franchise. And it was, I think, particularly salient this year that Black lives were on the ballot. We were looking at equity. We were looking at inclusion. We were looking at our personal safety. We were looking at the discord and the language that was being levied against Black and brown people from the White House. And I think that was a huge contributing factor, as well as what has been happening with COVID and how it has taken a disproportionate number of Black lives because of this virus and how it has been managed. And between that and education, and there was just so many issues that brought Black women to the polls, but we also saw that it was our role to step up to protect our democracy and make sure that all of our voices and that were heard and that everyone had an equal chance to not just survive but truly thrive in this country. And in order for that to happen, we felt that it needed to be a change in the administration.
If you are listening to our segment and you yourself are a Black woman or a Black American voter and you want to tell us your thoughts about this historic election, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE. That's 877-869-8253. Martha, Kamala Harris has regularly paid tribute to Black women who have come before her, like civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer and Ida B. Wells and so many others. Were there echoes of these women during this election cycle?
Absolutely. And thank you to Senator Harris for giving the nation a lesson in Black women's political history, because you're right. She has at every opportunity at the podium reminded us of the legacy of women like Fannie Lou Hamer, like Ida B. Wells, and so many others. I think one of the things that we see in Senator Harris that is so characteristic of this legacy is her broad, broad vision. In addition to all of the issues that Kimberly has so importantly laid out, Black women have characteristically, over the course of more than a century, held up the very notion of democracy, the very ideals, right, that undergird this nation, not only for Black Americans, but for all Americans. And what I hear when I see Senator Harris stepping to the podium, taking the microphone, is a candidate and now a vice president-elect who is speaking to all Americans, who is speaking to our highest ideals. And those are the interests not only of Black women, those are the interests of everyone.
I would love both of you to weigh in on this. Martha, I'll start with you, and then Kimberly, I'd love your thoughts here, because Kamala Harris, we've been talking about this since she was a candidate for president and then Joe Biden's running mate, but she has made history here as the first woman, the first Black woman, the first South Asian woman ever elected vice president in our nation's history. Also the daughter of immigrants. What will it mean to have someone like Kamala Harris in the White House? Martha.
You know, on the one hand, I think it's important to say that, in my view, dubbing her a first is in some ways faint praise. I think we should respect her for her singular accomplishments. But I think the most important effect of her election is the sign that Black women have become a force in American politics. No longer are we simply breaking barriers or becoming first, but we are really consolidating power at the highest level. Senator Harris ran alongside 130 Black women who were vying for seats in Congress in 2020. And this is a new day in American politics where no longer is she a token. She is someone who really has the capacity now to govern, to legislate alongside other Black women, and to steer the national agenda in many of the ways that Kimberly has outlined for us. Of course, I am someone, like many of us, so deeply moved by the images of our daughters and our granddaughters meeting, looking up to, watching the television as Kamala Harris takes the podium. And this representation will mean a great deal for the ambition of Black girls, young Black women going forward in the next cycles and in the next generations. But make no mistake, more than a force, more than a first, she is part of a force.
Kimberly, your thoughts on that, on what Kamala Harris, what it will mean to have someone like Kamala Harris in the White House, and also what does she symbolize, sort of picking up on what Martha was just saying about the future of Black women in politics?
Yeah, I absolutely echo everything that Martha said, and I think it really is a great opportunity to bring diverse voices, a diverse life experience to the highest decision-making table. And I think that's one of the things that is just so exciting and inspiring, in addition to seeing someone that looks like me, that looks like my daughter, but also to know that she will be bringing so much more that has never been part of this conversation. And it really shows the possibilities that exist. And we are continuing to expand Black women's elected leadership in this country, not just at the top of the ticket, but we are continuing to grow the number of Black women in Congress. There's still several seats that that are to be decided with the record vote count, but it looks like we have added three more Black women to the halls of Congress. There are so many firsts that are happening at the state legislative level, and it just shows that Black women are definitely a force, and we have something tremendous to contribute to the conversation, that the electorate sees value in those contributions and sees the opportunity to add more voices, different conversations, and more issues to the national discourse.
Martha, when we talk about Black women and political activism, we can't ignore the fact that Black Lives Matter was founded by three Black women. That is also something can you tell us a little bit about the historical engagement of Black women in terms of organizing movements like that, organizing to get the vote, organizing to bring attention to issues that affect not just Black women, but Black people more broadly?
We can't miss in this moment, even as Senator Harris is the vice president-elect, that what undergirds that is Black women's organizing. Just tune in to Alicia Garza and appreciate her message, right, which is yes to the streets and yes to the ballot box. And what we saw in this election season was the wedding of those two approaches to American politics.
Is that something that's, you would say, has gotten stronger, not just taking it to the streets, but actually taking it to the ballot box? Was that the missing link in terms of engagement, particularly for Black women, Black people in this country?
That has always been true for us, but I think that in this season, that became apparent in the sort of compressed circumstances of coronavirus, a summer of Black Lives Matter uprisings across the country, with this extraordinarily consequential election. We all got a lesson in African American politics, I think, this season, by seeing it compressed under extraordinary circumstances. Those facets that have always been there, and we saw them come together vividly.
Black women, Asian, white, Latina, Native American women, who throughout our nation's history have paved the way for this moment tonight. Women who fought and sacrificed so much for equality and liberty and justice for all, including the Black women who are often, too often, overlooked, but so often prove they are the backbone of our democracy.
Kimberly, we just heard Kamala Harris say that Black women cannot be overlooked anymore. Joe Biden, in his speech, essentially over the weekend, said that he recognized the power of Black voters. Are Black women going to finally get their due from this administration?
That is the hope. I think we're really hoping to finally get the return on our political investment, that we will, our issues will have a voice and have a place in this administration. And as much as we fought to support and get the ticket to this place, we will definitely be holding it accountable and looking at many of the policies that the president-elect laid out in his victory speech on Saturday night, that he actually puts a lot of policy and meat behind them. But I think this is a huge step forward. The fact that things like systemic racism and healthcare are front and center in his mind, and absolutely in the vice president-elect's mind as well. I think there's a huge potential for a tremendous amount of progress, but we will definitely be doing as much as we can to help advance that and also hold them accountable.
Martha, there's to your point about, you know, making a lot about being the first. Being the first often also means being the only. And there will be an enormous amount of pressure, not just on Joe Biden, but also on Kamala Harris being in that role. She received a lot of criticism before earning her spot as vice president in terms of how she dealt with criminal justice issues when she was attorney general of California. So the pressure that she is under is, I think, in many ways unimaginable, to have to sort of satisfy the demands of a very progressive constituency that essentially voted her into office.
I don't think Senator Harris is new to that sort of pressure. As you've mentioned, you know, she's already been subject to that kind of scrutiny, as she herself was part of this primary contest that led up to her nomination. So in one sense, I think she's someone who is, frankly, very tested when it comes to that sort of scrutiny, that sort of pressure. On the other hand, the pressure I'm interested in is what it is like for not only leaders in this country, but leaders across the globe to come to the table in Washington and sit across from now Vice President Harris to contend with a Black woman world leader, not only to understand her history, but to understand her position, her ideas, and frankly, to understand her culture. You know, one of the things that we've commented on is everything from Senator Harris rocking, you know, Tim's and Chuck's on the tarmac to the side eye during debates. I think there's a new page in the handbook of world diplomacy, and it will be one devoted to understanding how Black women come culturally to the table in American and world politics.
Kimberly, we saw an unprecedented number of Black women running in down ballot races. What did that look like in terms of our congressional makeup?
Well, it looked like a wave that began in 2018, where we saw a record number of Black women running for Congress up and down the ballot. To double that number, it was just over 160 Black women started out the primary, and I think just about half of those women made it onto the general ballot. And you know, we now see three, and we're waiting to see what happens with Lauren Underwood's race in Illinois. But it looks like she is up in the polls, so she will be going back to Congress. So it definitely continues to grow the number of Black women. We are slowly creeping up to almost 5% of the members of Congress. Black women are 7% of the U.S. population, so there's still a lot of work to be done. But it shows that Black women see their power, they see the possibility of their leadership, they see the value in their leadership, and they also see that now there's no reason to wait. They have something to contribute. There is a pathway, not just to the halls of Congress or to the Senate, but also a pathway to the vice presidency through Stacey Abrams' race in 2018. There is a pathway to the governorship and how to get over that final finish line. So I think we are going to continue to see the number of Black women who stand for office up and down the ballot continue to grow. And we're going to continue to see them not just run, but actually win and lead.
I think about John Lewis, and I think about him being the conscience of Congress, and why Black people have to bear this weight, and wonder how we can take some of that weight off of Black women to have to be, you know, this deciding factor every time an election comes around. Or maybe it's not a weight. I don't know. I mean,
I think it is a burden. It is not an enviable burden, I think, to be the conscience of this nation season after season. It is not an enviable burden to be holding up fundamental pillars of this democracy, like voting rights, season after season. at the same time, someone has to do that work, it seems, in our democracy. Thank goodness that Black women have been willing and able to step into that role and to be our conscience, but also to do the work on the ground to make good on our best ideals. I think that if there's one thing we could do, it might be, for example, to use these years to finally dispense with voter suppression. Right? Part of the effort that Black women have to make is because we're not only doing the work of getting folks registered, getting to the ballot box, getting those ballots counted, we're doing that in the face of a still rising tide of voter suppression across this country, whether it's shuttered polling places or it's 4-hour long lines or it's voter ID requirements or exact match obligations. This is the heavy lifting is in part structural, and we have an opportunity here going forward out of this election to restore the Voting Rights Act and to take down the kinds of barriers that Black women are having to hurdle themselves over in order to do the fundamental work of democracy.
One thing that we'll be talking about later in the show today is about Joe Biden's promise in his speech over the weekend to try to create some sort of unity, to not look at the other side, quote unquote, as enemies, but instead as Americans. And I think that that's going to be a very tall order. I think that if he attempts to do that, he will... while it sounds good, he's going to run into some difficulties. This is an extraordinarily divided country. We saw that in the election results. We saw that folks that are very progressive are going to hold Biden, the Harris-Biden ticket, their feet to the fire. And, you know, they've lost 70 million Americans who are not interested in seeing this administration. Will this incoming administration be able to create unity while at the same time fostering and moving forth goals that support Black people and specifically Black women?
Biden and the Democrats are at a crossroads, which is to say one way forward is indeed a kind of concession or an appeasement to the 70 million plus Americans who supported the Republicans and President Trump. The other way forward is to build a new kind of democracy, and that is one that certainly will include Black American women. And Senator Harris, I think we know now, Vice President-elect Harris will make sure of that. But let's remember, Latino voters, Native American women voters, Asian American women voters also disproportionately supported Vice President Biden and Senator Harris during their contest. And this is an opportunity to build a new Democratic Party that is inclusive of those stalwarts of this party, along with the many, many young people that turns out turned out for this election disproportionately. I don't know that both things are possible, even as both things are true. And so we are at a crossroads, I think, and the question of what this nation looks like, what its values are real thorny questions, as you suggest, not questions that can be easily resolved or papered over.
Kimberly Peeler Allen is a visiting practitioner at the Rutgers University Center for American Women in Politics. And Martha Jones is a professor of history at the Johns Hopkins University and author of Vanguard, How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. Kimberly and Martha, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.